have noted, we were going to hear bills on this subject today, but for various reasons, we will hear those bills next week. But because Ms. Underhill was already scheduled to attend today, we thought we would still have her give her presentation to the committee on online voter registration. So, Ms. Underhill, thank you so much for coming to Minnesota, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Senator Sieben. I'm delighted to be in Minnesota. It's almost a first for me.
Could you please state your name for the record, too?
Yes, I am Wendy Underhill, and I am here today representing the National Conference of State Legislatures. And there I am the program manager in charge of our elections team. The team consists of three people. We try to stay on top of all the issues that relate to elections, including voter registration, voting technology, polling place management, and many other similar topics. We also try to connect legislators and legislative staff with their colleagues from other states, and we follow trends in elections legislation. On that front, I'd like to say that online voter registration became a major trend in 2013, and it looks to continue to be so in 2014 as well. I'm prepared today to talk about three topics on online voter registration. Those are implementation over the course of time in the various states, the variation between voter registration systems in those states, and also a little bit about security. And if there are other topics that members would like me to address, I'd be happy to do so if I can. Starting off with the history of implementation of online voter registration, I think that everyone has a map that looks like this that shows the states that have online voter registration. There are 15 of them right now that NCSL counts as having online voter registration, and there are four additional states that are sort of on deck and will move in that direction as soon as they can get their programs up and running. The first of those states to go towards online voter registration was Arizona, and it did so in 2002. And it did it without any enabling legislation. They already had a data communication system set up with their motor vehicle department, and that motor vehicle department had an online portal where drivers could enter a change of address. And so the portal existed, and they expanded it to permit online voter registration through that same mechanism. The next state that adopted online voter registration was Washington, and it had legislation in the year 2007 and then implemented it in 2008. And after that came Kansas. Kansas, like Arizona, implemented it without any specific enabling legislation. They felt that they had what they needed from some legislation that had predated that, that brought them in line with the National Voter Registration Act. And after that, there was a couple of years lapse, but then boom, 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 more and more states have moved towards it. Minnesota, as you know, in 2013, and this year Connecticut has joined the crew to make the 15 that already have it up and running. For this year, 2014, we also have 15 states that have legislation that would permit online voter registration, and in that I'm including Minnesota. And additionally, in January of this year, the Bipartisan Presidential Commission on Election Administration produced a report, and one of its major recommendations was the adoption of online voter registration by the states that do not yet have it. As for variations in online voter registration systems, I'll start with similarities, and the similarities are that there's always a data match within government databases to confirm the information that's being entered by the voter. As for differences, I've come up with two states that, through that very same online voter registration portal, allow voters to request an absentee ballot, and those two states are Utah and Maryland. There are three other states that I have found that have online voter registration and also allow a person to request an absentee ballot online, but it's done through a separate portal, not through the online voter registration portal. And those other states are Arizona and Louisiana, and actually Clark County in Nevada.
Ms. Underhill, could you just explain for those of us who are not technically savvy what a portal means?
Probably not, but I'll give it a shot. through a different web page, through a different, you pull up a different URL and enter it through a separate page.
Okay.
Web page probably makes more sense. Another difference is that many websites, and certainly those at the beginning, were available on a computer, but now Colorado has led the way in web optimizing of their website, which means that it can be pulled up on a different kind of device as well. And other states are moving in that direction also. Nevada has a link on Facebook for online voter registration, and there too other states are considering or moving in that direction. Indiana's system warns registrants that providing false information is a felony, and it describes the penalties for that. That may be true for some of the other states as well, but I'm aware of it in Indiana. And 8 states offer online voter registration in Spanish as well as in English. That is information comes from a January report that came out of the Pew Charitable Trusts. I do not know that independently. And the report also says that Washington provides online voter registration in Chinese and Vietnamese as well as Spanish and in English.
Ms. Underhill, do you know if those allowances for languages other than English, were those just adopted by rulemaking or by the Secretary of State's deciding to do that, or was it specific through the legislation that was passed in the various states?
I'd like to make a guess here, but I won't. I'd be happy to get back to you with that information. I'm not certain about that.
Thank you
for that question. As for security, I am not an expert, but I have had the chance to interview 2 people who I think we could consider to be experts. One is J. Alex Halderman, who's from the University of Michigan. And I believe you have in front of you also an interview that I did with him and sort of a Q&A. So if you want to read more of his words on this, that would be great. The other person I've spoken with is Matthew Davis from the State Board of Elections in Virginia. But starting with what Mr. Halderman had to say, he said it's possible to do online voter registration securely. We just need to take the necessary precautions. And he went on to say that a system should be able to see that you are who you say you are. And in order to do that, the system needs to ask for information that only you are going to know and isn't easy for other people to get. And that would be driver's license number, date of birth, last 4 of a social security number, that kind of information. And I think when you wrap that up, often the words authentication is used so that you, as you enter this information into the system, you are authenticated with that information. As for what I've learned from Mr. Davis from Virginia, he also suggests that authentication is step number 1. And then he added that there's a thing called CAPTCHA, and we're probably familiar with this. When there's a CAPTCHA check on a web page, there's a little box that has some funny-looking letters or numbers in it, and you have to type it in so that it proves that it was a human being who read that and put it in. This is not a foolproof system, and it does have some disadvantages. It's difficult for people with disabilities, particularly visual disabilities, to be able to use it, but it is one way to ensure that the person who's doing it is an individual and not a computer program that's been arranged to enter false registrations. Mr. Dave has also shared with me that multi-screen applications are more preventive of hacking than a single screen. So this is where one question at a time would be asked, such as, what is your name? And then you hit a continue button, and then you answer the next question, and you hit a continue button. So it takes several screens before you finally hit submit. And this, too, it's harder for a hacker to create a program that can go all the way through such a system. And finally, he said that a data log that runs continuously will be able to highlight any unusual activity. So if, for instance, many registrations were all sent in at the same time from the same address, that would be flagged, and the systems management people could look into what was going on at that point. The comments that Mr. Davis has made, I do not have in writing for you. We did a webinar at NCSL in the fall of this year, and he is at the final third of that. So if anyone would like to hear him say these things on his own, I can point you to that absolutely. So in closing, Senator Sieben, I have addressed for you the adoption of online voter registration and sort of the history of that and some variations and then a few things about security. I have not talked about cost or savings or accuracy or bipartisanship or the way online voter registration can interact with third-party voter registration drives. And if anyone would like any comments on those things, I'd be happy to share if I can. Again, thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Thank you. If you would, could you please talk first about third-party registration drives and how you see that fitting into these systems in different states?
Yes, Senator, I'll do my best on that. In many parts of the country, many registrations are gathered by people in front of grocery stores with a clipboard where they have registration forms from the state, and they ask people, are you registered? And they say no, and the person fills out the form, and then that form is handed to election officials by this third-party registration drive volunteer or worker. If you have a online system, there are two ways that this could change. One is that it would be less necessary for third parties to feel that they needed to go out and do this because they could have a campaign that would say simply go online and register. Another is that they could bring a tablet or a laptop with them and have the people enter their information directly into the system. That would avoid a couple of problems, one of which is that there can be registration forms lost in between that interaction in front of the grocery store and actually getting them to the local election official's office. And it also keeps that data more secure. Instead of handing over the data that goes on a voter registration form to this third party who could choose to take some of that information off the paper and have access to it, it's entered directly into the system. So some people would say that this creates greater security. And in Virginia, again from Mr. Davis, he said that third-party registration folks want to know how many of these they've been able to gather. And so they have created a key that they can enter into the system when the person in front of the grocery store puts it into the laptop so that they can count how many they have done.
So, Ms. Underhill, it doesn't – if you're a third-party person registering – either on a tablet in front of the grocery store or asking people to fill out a postcard, which then that third-party person will transmit to the Secretary of State. Is there any difference in the data that is provided if you're the registrant, whether you do it online or on a postcard?
I don't know Senator, I don't know the answer for sure on that. Generally speaking, the same information is required by law for any registrant, so I'm guessing that it would be the same information, but I cannot confirm that right now. If you want me to look into that, I certainly could.
I'm just thinking that, so if you do it yourself, obviously it's somewhat more secure because, like you said, there's no chance that then that card could get lost or you're not necessarily showing whoever you're registering with the last four digits mm-hmm. of your social security number or your driver's license number mm-hmm. or your date of birth as required by Minnesota law. But I suppose there's not really any other there would not be any other substantial difference, if I understand.
That is my impression as well, yes.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the information. It's great to have that here. In regards to the third party, the biggest concern I have technology-wise is that if you're using an iPad or something like that, that it is easy to have an intercept program that gathers that data either as it's being entered into the online system or as it's being entered in. And so the security of those social security numbers and all that information, as soon as you have a third party, does bring up some real issues, I believe, that I think are really important. Was there anything in the study at all that addressed that particular kind of issue on third party?
Ms. Underhill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am unaware of anything further on that point. As Senator Kiffmeyer suggests, then the same data that's on this piece of paper would be available to the collector. So, again, if you'd like me to look into that, I will do my best to see if there is any way to prevent that.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you. And in regards to this online registration, a study you did in the states, did it say how these online voter registrations were authorized, how they were paid for?
Ms. Underhill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The study that we did at NCSL took place in the end of 2012, and it was a very simple study. We sent out emails to state election directors in the states that at that point had operative online voter registration systems. And we at NCSL did not ever publish this, but I've got a copy of the responses right here with me. We did ask about funding, both what did it cost and where did the money come from. And I'm afraid I may have forgotten the second part of this question.
How were they authorized?
And
by statute or so on?
Thank you. In all cases, with the exception of Arizona and Kansas and now Minnesota, there was enabling legislation prior to going live with an online voter registration system.
And Ms. Underhill, did you find in that study, did you ask questions about whether there was more voter registrations that took place once states offered online registration?
Thank you for that question. In a follow-up later on, I did ask a few states that, and if you allow me to ruffle my papers a little bit, I'll find that information. In Arizona, which I've said is the first of the states to go with an online voter registration system, they are now at 72% of all voter registrations are coming through online. Now, that 72% does include registrations that are done at the motor vehicle department, so it's not individuals necessarily all at their home doing it. In Colorado, where I believe they went live with their online voter registration in 2010, 16% of new registrations were coming in online in the year 2012. And that does not include those registrations that came through their motor vehicle department. Those would be the ones of individuals doing it. And in Kansas, in 2012, I have raw numbers, not percentages here for you. They had 168,000 new voter registrations, and of those, rounding up, 40,000 were done through their online system, leaving the rest to be done on paper. Again, that does not include registrations that are done at the motor vehicle department. And in the state of Washington, 21% of registrations were done online in 2012. And in addition to that, 37% registered through the motor vehicle department. And then the additional 42% were people who came across a paper registration and submitted it that way.
I suppose it's hard to know, though, how many of those registrants who registered online would have registered on paper otherwise or just not registered. There's no way to know that.
I would agree with you on that. If a person wants to be registered and the system exists for them, they'll find a different mechanism, and paper is still the traditional mechanism.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse me, Ms. Underhill. First of all, with regard to, for lack of a better term, what I call prevention of voter fraud and data privacy, to me they are two separate but intertwined issues with respect to online voter registration. And if I understood your testimony correctly, the prevention of voter fraud with online voter registration and the protection of personal data is doable with this kind of a system. Is that a fair representation?
Yes, I believe that is. Again, I'm not personally able to vouch for how they work, but that's what I've heard from these experts. And the first man, Mr. Halderman, he's noted in the elections community as something of a skeptic on technology, but he said that the online voter registration with the right parameters, and he talked about putting resources towards it in the design phase, towards ongoing resources to monitoring a system, to auditing systems. So if all of those are in place, he would say that it is indeed secure.
And Ms. Underhill, not as you sit there now, but would you be able to point us in the right direction so that we could obtain some you know, independent information. So as we are entertaining our legislation involving online voter registration, we would be in a position to ask the right question of security people, keeping in mind that there's a lot of folks like me that really don't understand it. Would you be able to point us in the right direction or give us some idea of where to find that kind of information?
Ms. Underhill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can do my best. What I know at this point is that there haven't been any breaches of security that have surfaced in any of the systems that are up and running right now. Of course, that doesn't mean that that couldn't happen in the future. I think what you're asking for is who would be the experts to talk to about how to get this done properly.
And Ms. Underhill, if I could just add, I'd be curious to know whether states specifically legislated or put into their statute what security steps need to be taken and how specific that language is written into any legislation that enacted online voter registration, if that makes sense.
That does. I could easily provide for you and have it at the office at this point the language from the states that did have enabling legislation, so we can pull that and send that to you to see what was included in that.
Great. Thank you. Senator Newman?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and I agree with Chair Sieben on that issue. If you could help us with that, I would greatly appreciate it. A different avenue of questions would have to do specifically with the state of Arizona and Kansas, which are the two states in which online voter registration was implemented without enabling legislation, if I understood you correctly. I missed specifically what you were talking about with regard to federal law. So my question is, in those two states, did they rely on some federal law for the purposes of implementing online voter registration, or did they somehow rely on their local state laws for the purposes of it, of implementing it without online or without specific enabling legislation?
Ms. Underhill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When I spoke about federal law, I think I may have gotten us down the wrong path. In 1993, the National Voter Registration Act was passed that required in most states, I think with the exception of Minnesota, to offer voter registration at the Motor Vehicle Bureau. So when Kansas enacted legislation to line up with that, they arranged for some amount of interactivity between the motor vehicle folks and the elections folks. So it wasn't and then that sat on the books for many years. And then when Kansas was ready to go forward, they felt that they already had, from that state legislation, the authority to do online voter registration. So they did it under state authority, not under federal authority.
Okay.
And likewise with Arizona, the connection was made in response to the National Voter Registration Act long before online voter registration was considered, but it was state legislation that they used. And I do have the citations from Arizona if that's useful to the committee.
And one last question, I hope, Madam Chair, if
please.
I may. Ms. Underhill, specifically with respect to the Uniform Electronic Transactions Act, is there any state in the nation that you are aware of that relied on that Uniform Act for the purposes of enabling the creation of an online voter registration system?
Ms. Underhill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do not know what that is, so the answer is I do not know if anyone has relied on that.
That's a fair answer. Sometimes we forget that I don't know or I don't remember is an honest answer. Thank you very much, Ms. Underhill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Newman. Ms. Underhill, Senator Limmer, did you have a question?
No.
Thank you very much for your testimony here today and for helping us understand some of the differences between different states and the things that we should look for as we hopefully implement or pass a statute that allows for online voter registration. We really appreciate you traveling from Colorado and your time and expertise with us here today.
Well, thank you, Senator. It was a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you. Senator Bonoff, Senate File 1811. Senator Bonoff, welcome to the committee, or welcome back to the committee. I was hoping that you could, I understand that you have some bill or some amendments that you'd like to get the bill in the shape you would desire. This is the first stop of Senate File 1811. So if you would like to, we could adopt those amendments now, and then you could explain them with the amendments, with them incorporated.
Madam Chair, thank you. I would like to offer the A1 amendment right now, because that does get the bill in the shape that I'd like it to be in. The other two amendments that I have, or the other three amendments, are more substantive and will take some conversation. So I would leave that to you, but you may want to just do the A1 for now and then have the discussion and then consider the other amendments as they do change a little bit of the direction of the bill.
Okay. With that, Senator Kiffmeyer moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye. Opposed? The A1 amendment is incorporated into your bill.
And Madam Chair, just a little bit about the A1 amendment. When the task force finished its work, it was the recommendation of counsel at the time that we make sure that whatever changes we made to the law with regard to the use of e-poll books live beyond just a pilot. And so what the A1 did is it went into our statutes and modified all of our voting statutes to be consistent with the changes that we were putting in law as a result of the e-poll book pilot. So I just want to make sure that it's on the record that essentially, and I would be happy to take you through all of the changes line by line, but essentially that's what the A1 does.
Okay.
With the addition of adding a requirement for some pre-election testing.
And that is in section...
And the pre-election testing is line 1.20 to 1.23.
Okay, thank you.
In addition, things like having a January 15th deadline. So, again, just very technical changes.
Great. So, to the bill as amended.
Madam Chair, I was part of, as well as Senator Kiffmeyer, was part of the task force that was created in law last session. And the task force was both to study the e-poll book pilot that we put in place and also to examine the use of photographs as driver's license, to examine the use of incorporating the driver's license photos in our election process. As the task force met, it became apparent pretty quickly that the use of driver's license photos was not going to really be workable at all because of just constraints around being able to identify people, you know, many years out after a photo's been taken, eye fatigue, technological glitches. And so that part of the assignment of the task force was really put away quite quickly. And
excuse me, Senator Bonoff, I just was curious, could you expand on that a little bit more? So was there any issue with getting the data from DVS, which I thought, if I recall, that was one major concern as well, that they weren't
Madam
able
Chair,
to
we had the DVS people were part of the task force, and we had the sense that we would have been able to get through that hurdle. It was more the hurdles around actually using the photos as a means of identification, that there were so many technological challenges around being able to make that work. And no other states are doing that. And there was discussion about how probably in our future we may see things like facial recognition software or, you know, fingerprint software. The actual use of the driver's license photo is not something that we learned was going to be reliable over time. You know, the judges getting fatigued, you know, 2 and 3 and 4 hours later, having to look at these photos and things blur together. And as we all know, appearance changes over time pretty quickly. So I was, if you recall, one of the stronger proponents of looking at that because that came up around the whole voter ID amendment. And so I had brought that up as one way to identify people. And I quickly saw that just wasn't going to work. And so, again, that part of our task went aside, and we spent our time examining the pilots that were in place, and that's why I have, for example, here with me today, David Maeda, who led that effort both in Minnetonka this time but had done it twice before, and I have Beth Fraser from the Secretary of State's office to go over those pilots, the results, and what was gleaned from them. And so the bill that you have before you today is the bill that was, with the exception of the amendment, which the members of the task force knew about, is the recommendations as it came forward from the task force.
And could you just clarify you're saying the A1 amendment was not part of the task force recommendations?
Yes, Madam Chair. The A1 amendment was discussed on the phone that council had recommended that we go into our statutes and make conforming changes, but we didn't have time. We were already having a phone call to do the final vote the next morning after the deadline. And so members of the task force knew that I was going to follow up and do that, and there was no dissension with regard to that. So what I'm telling you is that what's before you now is a consensus bill of the committee. In fact, Senator Kiffmeyer and I sometimes didn't agree with the members. We actually wanted to move more quickly than the task force did on a few issues.
Thank you. And Senator Bonoff, could you just walk us through the bill so the members of the committee understand the different sections about the pilot project, extending the pilot project, and then Article 2 of the bill, which is a little different.
Madam Chair,
Senator Kiffmeyer,
if I could just interject, only because I know there's going to be a longer discussion, so if I could make a comment on the photo thing before we go further, otherwise it gets so separated. On the photo thing, the original premise of the photo thing was purely an election judge looking at the photo and personally matching up photos with the person in front of them. And I concur that that is not realistic. I never did think that was the strongest part of a photo ID requirement. It was the fact that you carry your ID with you, and its possession indicated that you were who you say you were. And again, some of the unique information that is on that or that tying together with not so much matching the photo, but matching that to the DVS list that would have that same data in that list that would confirm that. But I believe that more often it's your possession of your ID that determines the value of that, because you shave, you grow hair, you color hair, you cut your hair, you do things. And so I appreciate that. But I just wanted to add in that it was mainly the expectation that of an election judge, person after person, looking at just photos and saying, this is who you are. And the kind of system that was being talked about in this particular kind of a task force was really just photo-based, and I had concerns about that because it wasn't tied to the actual doing some other things that would be part of the verification of who you are.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer. I understand that. And I think that was some of those same concerns that sounds like you discussed were concerns that some of us raised around the photo ID requirement and how you may look different than your picture on your ID and if you've aged and things like that. But we're not here to debate photo ID. So Senator Bonoff, if you could just walk through the different articles of the bill as broadly as you'd like. But
thank you. So Article 1 sets forward the electronic roster study. Subdivision 1 establishes the study to explore the use of electronic rosters in the 2014 general election. And so, as you know, when we did our pilots this last election cycle, very small elections. And so the committee felt that It was important to try these on a much broader scale. This would be a governor's election, so it would be a more substantial, and we would also have a U.S. Senate election at that time, so and many more participants.
Senator Bonoff, sorry to interrupt, if mm-hmm. you don't mind, though. Is the thinking that if you move to a state general election, there'll be more voters in line, and so having the electronic poll books there is supposed to expedite the line and help move people more quickly, or is that something that did the task force discuss the real benefits of having the electronic rosters in these precincts?
Madam Chair, the task force realized the benefits just from watching how it expedited the process on the smaller scale election. So we're quite clear that the use of e-poll books will make our elections much more efficient, streamlined, and be in line with what modern technology avails us. The reason for moving to pilots in the general election is because if there are hiccups with the machines and the technology, rather than just declare this done, we're going to go statewide. And again, this was the consensus opinion. I would have to say I'm not so sure that's where I stood, but the consensus was let's make sure we're studying this one more time with all the people present so that we can see if the technology, you know, is where we need it to be to accomplish this. Rather, so it was more, we're quite sure it'll make it faster, but making sure the technology is working the way we need it to work for Minnesota's elections. Subdivision 2 lists the municipalities that will be participating in this study. The reason why you note in the bill that while we do list certain municipalities, we wanted to have a cross-section, and it was very much of a opt-in situation, those who wanted to participate. But given the experience that we had, we also knew that it would be appropriate for other jurisdictions who weren't going to be studied to participate. We do have that experience now. We have that technology. So the bill is permissive. It says we're going to study those municipalities that are provided for in the bill, yet it's permissive. If others want to participate, they're just instructed to follow the letter of the law that our bill sets forward in terms of the implementation.
And Senator Bonoff, on that point, are you requesting resources or the actual poll books to be provided to these municipalities?
Madam Chair, there is in the fiscal note, there is money set aside to do the study for those municipalities. If the participating other municipalities, we would not be providing them with the cost. That's a policy decision that I think the legislature will have to make. What is the state's role in funding these? But that's not part of this bill.
Thank you.
So Subdivision 3 provides a list of technology requirements that electronic roster must meet. The requirements relate to the downloading and uploading of data. And that was one of the things that as a task force member, I was the most disappointed with is that when we did our pilots this past November, the Secretary of State's office was not able to meet our request to, if at all feasible, be prepared with the uploading and downloading feature. That wasn't done. And so the pilot projects that were done this November weren't really full pilots. They didn't have that feature to be able to then quickly upload their data back and get instant results. So the requirements besides the uploading and downloading, entering and changing the data, and within a very closed system, there was a lot of time spent on making sure that our systems are closed with regard to privacy and security. We also talked about being able to scan a Minnesota driver's license or identification card, alerting election officials to missing data, challenges, and other issues, providing for a voter signature certificate that includes voter information and the space for the voter's originals signature. We will be discussing an amendment after this that went beyond what the task force did, where some of our municipal folks have brought forward the request that because we're moving to an electronic poll book, we ought to also accept e-signatures, which I would concur with that, but again, it's not in the task force recommendation. It contains only pre-registered voters from within the precinct, and it's networked only within the polling place on election day. Again, these are all about security. The voter registration application and voter signature certificate can be printed forms or labels that are printed and affixed to a pre-printed form. Subdivision 4 states that Minnesota election law applies to the study unless otherwise provided. Voters participating in the Safe at Home program must be allowed to vote pursuant to that program. Nothing in this bill shall be construed to amend absentee voting provisions. Subdivision 5 requires that the voter signature certificates and voter registration applications be retained in the same manner as other election materials. I think that's self-explanatory.
Senator Bonoff, just excuse me again for a second. I was wondering if council could answer this question on lines 2.33 and 2.34 for what would be an exception to Minnesota election law, or what does this mean?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is sort of, for lack of a better term, comfort language. There are some things in here that we require that wouldn't normally be required for districts not using poll books. So sometimes, practically speaking, if the statute references, you know, a paper roster, you can use the electronic roster. So it's just making it work within the bounds of what we have. It's not free rein to ignore statutes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Subdivision 6 requires participating precincts to use electronic rosters for both election day registration and to process the pre-registered voters. Printed election day registration applications must be reviewed when the records are processed in the statewide voter registration. Election judges must determine the number of ballots to be counted by counting the number of original voter certificates or the number of voter receipts. Madam Chair, again, in one of the amendments that I'm going to be bringing forward, we give the judges or in the precincts the choice of actually using the e-roster to do their count, and you'll hear some testimony of why some things that's beneficial and why there might be a concern with regard to that, if you would allow that discussion in today's hearing. Subdivision 7 requires the Secretary of State to requisition an evaluation of the use of the electronic rosters in the 2014 and to complete that study by January 15th. Subdivision 8 requires the Secretary of State and Minute in consultation with the Minnesota Association of County Officers and the League of Minnesota Cities to conduct a build or buy analysis of an electronic roster system. Madam Chair, this turned out to be pretty costly, and I know Senator Kiffmeyer and I had talked about this, and I did not have time to talk to Senator Kiffmeyer about this one issue, but in talking to, for example, Joe Mansky, who you're going to hear from, it was his thought that because technology changes so quickly and the builder buy analysis is so costly that perhaps it might be appropriate to delete that section and not do that analysis to save the $90,000. But again, I would be interested what Senator Kiffmeyer thinks about that, because we hadn't discussed that, and given she was the person on the task force who is here today. I believe Secretary of State's office was aware that I was going to suggest that and was okay with that. Subdivision 9 allows other municipalities to use electronic rosters in the 2014 general election as long as they meet the requirements of this section, as I mentioned previously. And Article 2 is the one that really then puts into practice everything that we learned from the pilots and provides for statewide use of electronic rosters starting in 2015. It authorizes counties, municipalities, and school districts to use the electronic rosters, does not mandate their use. The electronic rosters must comply with all the requirements in the section, and they must have the same information as the paper rosters. Requires the electronic rosters to meet the specified technology requirements, and says that our Minnesota election law applies to them just as it applies to the paper. It requires the voter signature certificates and voter registration applications to be retained in the same manner as other election materials, allows the precincts to use the electronic rosters for the election day registration to pre-registered, to process the pre-registered or both, and it requires a county, municipality, or school district that intends to use the electronic rosters to notify the Secretary of State at least 90 days before the first election in which it intends to use the electronic rosters. This is very important to make sure that the Secretary of State is prepared to provide them with their uploading information. And then Article 3 is just our definitions and conforming changes based on the other changes in the bill.
Great. Thank you, Senator Bonoff. Perhaps we should, would you like to the other testifiers to go now, or do you want to talk about other amendments?
Madam Chair, let's hear from the testifiers first.
Mr. Maeda, are you next? Sure. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Maeda. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is David Maeda. I'm the Minnetonka City Clerk. I was also the League of Minnesota Cities representative on the task force. I wanted to publicly thank Senator Bonoff and Senator Kiffmeyer for not only last year's legislation establishing both the pilot and the task force, but their leadership on this issue. I think this is a very important election administration issue, and I've enjoyed working with both of you on it. I also wanted to publicly thank the other four cities and their corresponding counties that participated in the pilot. It was a lot of work to pull it off, and I think everyone did a terrific job. Senate File 1811 does move us closer to modernizing our elections processes. I was a member of the task force, along with Senator Bonoff, that was a little bit skeptical about doing another pilot project. As mentioned, Minnetonka has started a pilot project in 2009, and we basically have been using poll books in some fashion in most of our elections ever since then. So to do another pilot to me seemed a small step, and I was ready to go forward with some type of implementation of real use. But I do understand some of the task force concerns about making sure we do this right and do it thoughtfully. So I do support a pilot this November. I think it's important to do it in a bigger election. I think it's also important to include some of the other jurisdictions that are included in the legislation. I've talked to my colleagues in Lakeville, Eagan, and Minneapolis. They're all very excited about participating, and they really want to learn how the technology can help in their election administration duties. Article 2 of the bill, I think, was somewhat of a compromise by the task force because it establishes going forward a process where if a city or a county wants to start using poll books starting in 2015, it sets up the criteria for us to do so. For me, this is the most important section of the bill because I really do think at some point we should begin implementation on a small scale at first, not do it statewide, but allow jurisdictions that do want to use the technology to use it in actual elections. I'll conclude my testimony with a personal note. A few weeks ago, I was fortunate enough to be invited by the Laramie County Clerk in Cheyenne, Wyoming, to observe a mock election that they were doing for their county clerks and their Secretary of State on how electronic poll books could be used in Wyoming. This was the first time they had done something like this. It was very similar. It struck me as very similar to what we did in Minnetonka in 2009. It was a mock election as opposed to a pilot project, but the atmosphere seemed very similar. What she learned, I think, is similar to what I learned in our 2009 pilot. I think she's facing some of the same skepticism, but general agreement that the technology would improve a lot of their processes. What struck me, too, is so they're 5 years behind Minnesota on where they are in the process, and yet I really think they're going to implement in Wyoming before we do in Minnesota. They have a bill moving forward in their legislature that would establish use in this year's elections, and from what I heard, it has a very good chance of passing.
And Mr. Maeda, excuse me, how are they paying for it?
There's an appropriation by the legislature.
The legislature is purchasing the technology for all municipalities statewide?
Yes. And it's not mandatory for all municipalities to use.
Thank you.
2 points to why I told this story. The first point is my mom was born and raised, and she graduated college in Wyoming. And our family used to tease her a lot about growing up in the middle of nowhere where there are very few amenities. But I can hear her laugh at me now because Wyoming really is the leader in elections, and I saw that firsthand. So that's point one. The real point to my little anecdote, though, is other states are already using this technology. and many states are looking at implementing it going forward. So Minnesota is not really breaking ground by using this technology. One of Minnetonka City Council members is fond of saying that he likes our city to be leading edge, but he doesn't like us to be bleeding edge. And I really think with this bill, we're not crossing that line into being bleeding edge. I think we're doing what other states are thoughtfully doing, and I think we're making our election system even stronger. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Maida, and thank you for all your work over the years on this subject. Are cities, in your experience, are cities in Minnesota now that did the pilot project, are they generally using tablets or are they using laptops?
Madam Chair, for the pilot in 2013, there was a mixture. The vendor we used what the vendors recommended, so we had a vendor that did an Android tablet. We had a vendor that did iPads. We had a vendor that did a touchscreen notebook, and then a vendor that did laptops.
And Mr. Maida, in your experience, do you foresee any challenges with having different precincts using different technologies?
Madam Chair, that's a very good question. I've asked that question to the vendors if we can do a blend of different devices, if that's the way our budget allows purchases. And the general answer is yes, that the vendors are developing their products to be kind of hardware neutral, so you can use their product on any type of hardware. The only concern I would have is for the 2013 pilot, Minnetonka actually used two different vendors. And so we had to provide two different sets of trainings to the judges that were going to use two different types of devices, and that did get a little bit complicated to do.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Maida? Ms. Frazier, welcome back to the committee. Please state your name.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Beth Frazier, Deputy Secretary of State. And we are really excited to be working with Senator Bonhoff on this bill and appreciate all of her work and Senator Kiffmeyer's work and all of the task force members' work on this legislation and the report. We had many meetings during the interim and I think came up with a good product. And we're excited to be moving forward. The recommendation to do another study, we think, is the right next step for Minnesota. And as you were discussing before, it will provide the opportunity to do a test in a higher volume election, both in terms of there will be more voters generally, but there will also be more same-day registrants. What we find is that in off-year elections, it's mostly regular voters. And so although localities in the pilot were able to test the same-day registration functionality, if there's only three same-day registrants all day, it doesn't give you a really good sense of the time savings because it's such a small sample. And so in a statewide election, it will really, I think, help highlight what the potential is for time savings and cost savings. Before the 2014 election, we will be able to complete the programming so that there will be able to be a full test in 2014 for both same-day registrants and pre-registered voters. And the legislation is helpful in that it eliminates the requirement that was in place for the 2013 pilot to have some duplicative processes. So it required both that you go through the regular process and sign the regular forms as well as using the electronic software. And so what we found was that voters didn't understand why they were having to sign their name four times instead of two, for example. And eliminating that need in the 2014 pilot, I think, will be very helpful. It does require paper backups in case the poll book goes down, but that's an improvement for the pilot in 2014. The recommendations of the task force are, as Senator Bonhoff said, to appropriate funds to the local election officials who are participating in this study to offset costs that they might incur. One of the things that folks in this year's pilot found was that a few of them had to incur costs. For example, the vendor was willing to loan them one electronic poll book, but was recommending that they use two. And so they had to rent a second one. Or, for example, the vendor said, well, we'll be available for 3 hours on election day. And they said, no, we need your help all day. And so they had to pay for additional time. And in an even year, when so many localities are going to be relying on the vendors, the task force felt it was important to provide some funds so that local jurisdictions weren't bearing the full brunt of any costs they might incur. The legislation and the task force report also provides for an empirical evaluation of the electronic roster. So an actual study by an outside analysis of how much time does it take to download the data? How much time does it take election judges in polling places using the electronic rosters and not using the electronic rosters to check in voters, to do same-day registrants, and after the fact to enter the data and or upload the data? And everyone believes that information will be very helpful going forward for local governments and the state government to do a cost-benefit analysis. How much time and money could this really save? And given that, where should costs, is it worth the cost? And if so, who should bear the cost? So the fiscal note also includes the cost of that evaluation as well as the builder buy analysis that Senator Bonhoff mentioned. The pilot was a really great opportunity to see this technology in action. And one of the things that makes Minnesota different than most other states that are using this technology is that we do have same-day registration. And so the local governments participating in the study had to work with the vendors to help make sure that they understood our requirements and how it's different from other systems. And while the pilot was successful, there were definitely some glitches and some times when, for example, the vendor didn't understand that they had to program into the system which proof of residence a same-day registrant showed. And so that was not included in the electronic file. The counties had to go in after the fact and type it in. You know, obviously, before we go full scale, we want to be sure that all of the fields are filled in and that the requirements are fully there. There were also some instances where it did seem to, and it's unclear whether this is because election judges need more training on the technology or what, but there were some instances where it did seem pretty slow for election judges, and in I think at least one case they reverted to the paper methodology because that seemed faster, and maybe it's just because they were more familiar with it. But I do think those are some reasons that doing another pilot makes sense. I do have some comments about other amendments after they're offered, but that's the end of my initial comments. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you. In the discussion with vendors and in anticipation of a contract, does the vendor have any financial liability in the event that there would be a recount based on a failure of their system or their hardware? You know, recounts can sometimes be expensive. And if it was a failure on the part of the vendor's equipment, is there something in the contract that says that they would pay for the recount if it was a failure of their equipment that caused the problem?
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, you raise a good question. And within the bill, we do direct the Secretary of State's office to establish rules to make sure that this actually works. And I think that would be an example of something that could be done as a rule. We don't actually address the contract and vendor specifications within this bill. We just set forward the framework. But that's a good point. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. That could also be an element, a conditional element for the legislature to agree upon as well in establishing the outer parameters of such a contract. I'm not prepared to make an amendment.
Ms. Frazier.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, a recount is really a question about who got the most votes and counting the ballots again to establish that, whereas the electronic rosters are really about voters coming into the polling place and signing in. And so any question about the number of voters that actually came in would be subject of an election contest, not a recount.
Madam Chair, they're not in and of themselves separate. The registration of voters through an electronic means or any other means sets the parameters of who is voting. And if there is a question of a miscount or something that's caused by an electronic glitch in the earlier registration of those voters, they could be related. And that's the only reason I raise that question.
Ms. Frazier.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, again, I think that would be the subject of an election contest instead of a recount.
Senator Newman.
Madam Chair, to Senator Bonoff, either of the testifiers or even Ms. Underhill, who is still in the room, by my count, you know, the city of Minnetonka did sort of an informal pilot project initially. And we had a pilot project last year, and now we're back looking for yet what I would consider a third pilot project. And, you know, it is going to cost the state of Minnesota some money if we go forward with this. So my question is, other states, what has other states done with this electronic poll book question? And did they also utilize multiple pilot projects before going live with it? I'm just kind of looking for some guidance as to other states.
Senator Bonoff.
Madam Chair, I have a copy right here that was taken out of the NCSL's research, and they say 12 states have statutes that explicitly authorize the use of e-poll books. When Minnesota is listed, it says legislation called for a pilot project, and that is not what is said under most of these. So to your point, Senator Newman, it's my opinion that we're at a point where we could enact enabling legislation to go forward with e-poll books. I don't personally believe the going to the next step as a pilot is necessary for Minnesota to move forward with e-poll books. That's a personal opinion. What I brought forward was the task force's recommendation, but I was a strong voice to not go in that direction. And I won't speak for Senator Kiffmeyer, but I would encourage Senator Kiffmeyer to share her opinion on that as well.
Senator Newman first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, would you allow Ms. Underhill to come to the table so I could address a question to her?
Certainly. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Underhill, I don't mean to put you on the spot. This is completely spontaneous. But can you provide us with any kind of insight as to whether other states have utilized the pilot project methodology before going live with electronic poll books? And what, if any, kind of problems have they had in other states, you know, if any, with regard to the electronic poll book?
Thunderhill.
It's possible that some states have had pilot projects prior to going live. Many states have also had no legislation at all, and local jurisdictions have just simply bought and adopted e-poll books without any legislation at all. And then a certain segment of the states have had this enabling legislation, which we can go through right here if you'd like to. It might be helpful. And three states, I believe, simply refer to e-poll books as if they already exist, so it's sort of in passing without any sense of authorization for them first. Let me also add that as best I know, Larimer County in Colorado was the first to go with these e-poll books, and that the goal there was to make the same data available in vote centers in the county. So it was connected up and down from the county poll registration list right from the get-go. So it was going down a different path to permit vote centers, and I'm happy to talk to you more about that if you'd like.
Madam Chair, Ms. Underhill, to my second part of my question, any particular problems in other states that have utilized electronic poll books that you are aware of?
Ms. Underhill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am unaware of major, excuse me, there's one place where there was a difficulty that I know of, and it was in Denver, and I believe it was in the 2008 elections. There, too, they were moving to the vote center model, which has a bunch of other ramifications, and their poll books were not fast enough to keep up, and they reverted to paper, if I'm not mistaken, at that point.
Senator Newman.
And Ms. Underhill, thank you very much for coming back up to the table. I wasn't not my intent to put you on the spot. I just thought I'd take advantage of you being here. And Senator Bonoff, I really don't have any particular disagreement with this. I don't know if I support it or don't support it. But just as an observation, I'm not at all sure that we need enabling legislation in order for various jurisdictions to go forward with this. I mean, maybe it's a good idea, maybe it isn't. But that's just, my off-the-cuff opinion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair, Senator Newman, some of the legislation that the bill puts forward in Article 2 and that was laid out in the pilots are things that I think you would care about. So making sure it's a closed system, that we aren't connected to the internet in such a way that somebody could tamper in and get access to Social Security numbers, making sure that there's a paper backup so that if there was a technology failure, your elections would still be able to be assured, making sure that the technology is consistent with the parameters that the Secretary of State's office would set forward. I think it may sound simple to just be permissive without statutes, but we in Minnesota pride ourselves on impeccable elections. And I think in keeping with that commitment, you would want some of the things in statute if we were to open the doors about e-poll books. And I actually, the task force never even considered just saying, you don't need anything. So I think the members did feel strongly about that.
Senator Bonoff, to follow up on this point, I was looking at these. You have 12 jurisdictions listed in Article 1 that in the fiscal note says that would include 18 precincts at $5,000 per precinct. What is the effective difference of studying a precinct in Baxter versus Minneapolis? Besides, I would assume the difference in the number of voters who would, the flow could be different. But what results are we gaining by having so many different municipalities studied? For Mr. Maeda.
Madam Chair, I think, not knowing enough about Baxter, I don't want to insult Baxter, but I think Minneapolis has a unique situation where they have a lot of people that Election Day register. They have a very large student population. So those types of things, it would be interesting to see how the poll book can handle that volume of Election Day registration. For a city like Baxter, and again, I don't know what size they are, it would be interesting to see if the technology offers them enough benefit to go forward with an electronic alternative to paper, or if paper can continue to be used in a city that size.
And Mr. Maeda, so what about, I don't understand the difference between Eagan and Lakeville, or, Minnetonka and Lakeville. In terms of, it seems like they have the same approximate, the precincts are going to be the approximate size, and what else do you gain by studying different areas of the state?
Madam Chair, I think the reason Eagan, and I agree with you, Eagan and Lakeville would be very similar to the experience in Minnetonka. I think the reason they were included in the legislation is Dakota mm-hmm. County really wanted to get involved in the pilot.
Madam Chair, there was a tremendous amount of interest on behalf of our municipalities to be part of this. And if you weren't included in a pilot, you didn't get any support for participating. And so there was strong requests on behalf of the municipalities to participate.
I mean, it seems to make sense because they're getting money that if they later want to use poll books, they're getting the state to provide the resources for that. Mr. Mansky, you've been patient, I can see, and holding back. So please proceed with your testimony and welcome to the committee.
Thanks, Madam Chairman. I'm Joe Mansky from the Ramsey County Election Office, and patience in this business is a virtue. And if I could just back up two steps, let me answer Senator Limmer's question. And Senator Limmer, I think I can tell you definitively, although I can't speak for them, I suspect we could not get an agreement approved by the county attorney without something in our contract with the vendor that said if there is malperformance of their equipment that they would owe us a penalty of some sort. I think that's a business relationship between us and whatever vendor that we end up doing business with. And the second I think I am in agreement that the pilot is probably superfluous. Madam Chair, I guess my recommendation to you, if push came to shove, is I would delete Article 1 from this bill. I think we had the pilot last year, and we learned not everything that we needed to know, but we learned a lot about what's going on. And so I think I'm probably in agreement with Senator Newman. My recommendation to you would be, let's just go ahead and authorize this as a regular activity, and it will start out small. And frankly, the amount of use will be directly dependent on how much state support that we are getting for purchasing and maintaining the equipment. But I think we're ready to go this fall with actual use in a real election. And I'll be honest with you, I would rather not spend state money on something that I don't know I'm going to be able to use next year. I don't see any real value to that. If I'm going to spend your money, or at least some of your money and some of my money, I'd rather do it for something that I know I'm going to be able to use for a few years.
Mr. Mansky, would municipalities or counties be able to use their HAVA, remaining HAVA funds, to purchase this equipment?
Madam Chair, you know, I'd have to do a little research in that, but I think the answer to that is yes.
And Mr. Mansky, do you foresee any – oh, Ms. Frazier may want to jump in.
We couldn't use our HAVA money. The money that we have in our possession is for voting systems. The money that the Secretary of State has remaining, or any unappropriated money in the Treasury account, I think is available for any HAVA-related purpose.
And do you foresee any practical implications if those dollars were spent on e-poll books? What would that mean for assistive voting technology and other new technologies that I know that counties and municipalities are interested in obtaining but are having a tough time because of lack of funding?
Madam Chair, I can only speak for our situation. We would not be interested in applying any of our HAVA money toward anything other than the replacement of our voting system, which we plan to do next year.
So just help me play this out a little bit. I would foresee that if this legislation moves forward that authorizes municipalities or counties to use electronic poll books, it would be a discussion up to your county board or the city council as to determine whether they want to move forward with purchasing this technology?
Madam Chair, again, just in our situation,
there are no state resources provided.
Since this is – voter registration is a county activity, we would envision that that at least in Ramsey County, the county would own the equipment and make it available for our cities to use. Again, from my standpoint, and I think this is just a statement of reality, that the rapidity with which the e-rosters are rolled out, I think, is going to be directly related to the level of state support. The reality is, and you know, we'll have this conversation again next year, I suspect, but that the e-rosters do not save us money. That the cost of purchasing, making the capital purchase, and then the ongoing payments to the vendors over the years to license their software and so on, is greater than the amount of staff time that we will save by being able to do the electronic transactions. That you should not go into this with the idea that there will be a net savings. You should go into it with the idea that we will have a more efficient process, that voters will get in and out of the polling place faster, that the work will be more accurate. I think all those things are worth getting into the e-rosters, but I cannot tell you that we will save money, because I do not believe, from our limited experience, I do not believe that will be the case.
Mr. Mansky, would you foresee that if Ramsey County would move forward with the purchasing of e-poll books, that you could, in one election, perhaps use them in one area of the county if there were especially long lines or there was a problem that you identified, and the next election switch it to another precinct? Or how do you think – because – quite honestly, I don't foresee a time in the immediate future where the state is going to have the resources to provide e-poll books to the, 3,000-some precincts that we have in the state of Minnesota. So I'm just trying to think about how if we pass this bill, how it will be implemented.
Madam Chair, and again, I can just speak for our situation. Once we have the e-rosters deployed, I think we would keep them there. And just using St. Paul as an example, given the fact that I have to work with my city council, I don't know that I can put them in one ward and not put them in another. I think that's just that politics is not working for me. So I as I see this, that our implementation would have to be citywide. We might not do every city simultaneously, but I don't see us being able to do part of a city's territory and not all of it.
And Madam Chair, excuse me. Madam Chair, Mr. Maeda has a different view on cost savings, so I'd like that dissenting view to be on the record.
And Madam Chair, I don't know for sure that over time the capital purchase would be paid off by the savings, and it would be mostly at the county level who process all the information after the election. So Mr. Mansky would have a better idea about that. But I would say I've seen information granted from the vendors in others that in for the use in other states that eventually it does pay itself off. And since Minnetonka started using it in 2009, I mean, tablets have become prevalent in use, and we were using laptops, so the cost is actually, capital cost is actually coming down. And I think one of the benefits of keeping Article 1 in the study is I think it would kind of get at that analysis on the cost benefit of poll books over time.
And Senator Kiffmeyer.
Unless your testifiers want to go first.
Well, if you have a question,
well,
go ahead.
Yeah, in regards to, I did have a question for Mr. Mansky. When I look at it, sometimes people think of election electronic rosters on election day. I draw a little bit bigger picture because it is the post-election hand entry of data that is the most costly and time-consuming. Your election judges are in the polling place on election day no matter what. And you have the equipment that gives a tremendous benefit, as we've already discussed. But I feel that the savings generally come from the post-election hand entry of data. And Hennepin County, in the months that they take with full-time people working 10, 12 double shifts a day for months, has got to produce savings if that data entry is completed on election day. There's no way you can think of that. So that's a comment. The other thing, though, is that one of the Article 1 is a minute buy, build, because on the state level, we have the state software for the state voter registration system. There's a kind of a division and a shared cost. Counties absorb certain costs, and the state, through the Secretary of State office, in the state voter registration system. If each county had to buy their own voter registration software, think of the cost and expense of that, but it isn't. It's done by the state. And so I think that one of the things that in Article 1, Subdivision 8, is that builder buy analysis, which I think will help to drive savings. And then also we must include the post-election data entry in our savings. If you don't include that, you're not getting a true picture, and I don't know either of you in your comments. The other thing, Mr. Maeda, I believe that you've had to do some extra time things because the Secretary of State office wasn't doing the download and the upload, and so you're having to do some hand work there. Article 1 and some other language, the uploading, downloading through the Secretary of State office, mm-hmm. I think those are factors that affect the cost return in regards to this concept.
Madam Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, let's talk a little bit about the costs. And you're absolutely right. The bulk of the costs that we incur right now are after the election, in posting the voting history, and for the election day registrants in adding them to the voter registration system. And again, those activities would not disappear, we would still have to have an individual interaction with these records to make sure that that in fact everything was correct. So that they wouldn't disappear, they would go down. But again, unless the capital costs really come down a lot, and frankly, since a lot of the vendors are making their profit off of the annual costs, that is what is really going to drive the break point at which the e-rosters either save money or not. But I am telling you, based on the cost that we have now, that the e-rosters would not save us money, but I'm telling you it is still worth doing that for all of the other benefits. And second, on the build or buy, and I remember a conversation I had with you on a similar subject about 15 years ago. I think on this issue, given the fact, as Senator Bonhoff said, that the technology is changing very rapidly. We used, I think as you know, we used iPads as part of our test last year. They didn't even exist 4 years ago. And given the risk entailed in putting a lot of money into hardware, my recommendation to you would be that you not do the build-buy analysis, that my thought is that the better approach is to buy, and that the buying reduces our risk. We transfer the risk to the private sector, which I think is where it belongs. They are set up to take on risk, and you know they have a pricing structure that rewards them for doing that. You know, we're not set up to do that, and I think the last thing that we want to do is to be caught with a bunch of hardware that, you know, in 4 years is obsolete. So, I mean, if you're looking for a way, Madam Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, to save a few dollars on this implementation, my suggestion to you would be just don't do the build-buy analysis. Just to let the counties buy equipment as they do now for voting equipment.
Madam Chair, okay, I just wanted to clarify, though, too. I was not referring to the hardware, such as iPads, only to software, because that is the true, just like the state voter registration system keeps the data and process, and the counties use that and do all that. What kind of technology it would be implemented in would its software, just like Microsoft Word. You can put it on an iPad. You can put it on a laptop. You can put it on all kinds of things. So it is having more to do with combining the efforts of all the counties into using into the software, which would be technology hardware neutral.
Madam Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, I think you're right about that. That clearly the state will have to do something in order to, first of all, send data out to all the devices that are out there, and I think there will be a wide variety of devices. Some counties will be using, netbook computers. Others will be using tablets. For all I know, some counties may use a smartphone or something similar to that. But all will have to get data from the state. All will have to send data back to the state, and there will need to be some core software that will be a part of the state voter registration system that the state will have to develop. And, of course, the question is, will they develop that internally or will they contract for it? And I think, you know, that may well be, I think that is an activity that probably is worth hanging on to.
And, Madam Chair, that is more what I saw as my intention. Gotcha. Was this, and it's always good to kind of have the vetting of language, because that was certainly in my mind, but I can see that it would need to be more clearly stated if we were to keep kind of some sort of build software, buy software, or whatever it takes to do that, which general counsel can certainly kind of come up with. But that, because I think that is what does have that value. And there's always, right now, a working relationship with SVRS between the counties, cities, and the state. That ongoing relationship and process can well be used. Matter of fact, the state right now the printed rosters, the whole layout and everything, is sent by the state to a printing system or laid out so you can print it in a PDF form locally. That's already done now and is a concept that I think kind of fits into that software thing, but definitely not the hardware.
Ms. Frazier?
Madam Chair and members, the programming of the statewide voter registration system to do the download and upload of data and upload of same-day registrants is either already completed or well underway and will be completed by this fall. So that doesn't need to be contemplated or there doesn't need to be an analysis of that because that is already in the works. So my understanding of the build or buy analysis was about software for the machines in the polling places and an analysis of whether that software should be developed by the state or bought from one of the many vendors that's already developed.
And does the Secretary of State have an opinion on that subject? Self of the software?
I mean, the task force recommended the builder by analysis. Our office basically thinks it's if the legislature wants us to do this analysis, we're happy to work with Minute to do it. But it does seem that there are a number of vendors already developing the software who are already working with local units of government to make the accommodations to for Minnesota election law, and that's probably the better direction to go, especially because it will allow local governments to continue to choose from a variety of vendors. Whereas if the state made the decision to build its own software, it would probably only make sense to make that investment if you were then going to require the locals to use that software, which then takes them out of the market and gives them less choice.
Madam Chair, I'm
Senator Bonner.
If Senator Kiffmeyer would like, we've got the A3 amendment, which then does delete that section.
So,
Madam Chair, I just want to clarify.
Senator Kiffmeyer?
So, in Article 1, it would only delete Subdivision 8?
Yes.
Lexi, or excuse me, Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It also deletes the appropriation that funds the build by analysis.
I'm fine with that.
Okay. So Senator Kiffmeyer moves the A3 amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The A3 amendment is adopted.
Then we have two more amendments. I don't know your time.
Please go, or which amendment would you like to discuss next?
I would like to discuss the...
I believe it's the
A6. And A6 was actually requested by Mr. Mansky and made good sense in terms of taking full advantage of the technology. What the A6 does is we put into our bill that you could scan the driver's license. And this says you could also scan a student identification card. And, in fact, you could scan the other things that we use as permissible ways to identify yourself so that you could have an e-record of those things you're scanning. So the bill in current form allows for scanning a driver's license. This amendment says you could, again, optionally scan a student ID card and or the other things that, by Minnesota law, allow you to identify yourself.
And Senator Bonhoff, is this permissive in that if it works with the Secretary of State's system, then they could do it? Because I'm just wondering, what if some college has an ID card that is not scannable or something like that?
Madam Chair, it is permissive. And then the other piece to the amendment, the bill required a written signature, and this allows for an e-signature, which I think we can all attest, those of us who shop at any grocery store or really anywhere, that is the direction that all of this is moving, where you put your finger on something and sign it. And then it still would print out the receipt with the voter signature, so it would still keep a record and for, you know, auditing purposes. But it would allow for the e-signature, so we're not, you know, here we are using an electronic poll book, but then having people sign on a corresponding piece of paper.
I'm wondering if anyone has any comments on that, because at least for me, I always feel like when I sign with my finger, it looks nothing like my regular signature. And so I'm wondering if that's a concern.
Well, let me just say this about that, Madam Chairman. Back in the winter, fall of 08, 09, I spent a lot of days sitting in court in front of the three-judge panel working on the Coleman-Franken election contest. And many of the issues that came before the three-judge panel had to do with signatures on absentee ballot applications and on the return envelopes that contained the ballot. The judges saw a wide variety of signatures and got testimony and affidavits from voters who, in some cases, did in fact provide an electronic signature, signed the document electronically, and then sent it into, you know, the appropriate city or county. My point here is that in every case, in 100% of the cases, that no matter how widely different the two signatures were, the three judges counted every ballot that was submitted to them that the person either came down to court and testified in person or submitted an affidavit. They counted every one. And I think the reality of the world here is that we all have two signatures. We have the signature that we put on paper documents that we sign with a pen, and then we have the signature that we use at Cub Foods and the bank and everywhere else. But both of them are ours, and I think that's just the way it is. But the benefit of the e-roster technology is that we get to leave stuff like this behind. And I think we want to leave it behind. I think we want to capture the voter's signature electronically. And when we print out the receipt that you get after signing the e-roster, at least as I see this, not only would that receipt have your name and your address and your birth date and your voter ID number, but it would have a copy of that signature that you just made on the signature pad, and that this is what you would give to our ballot judges in order to get a ballot.
Ms. Frazier, briefly, it looked like you had something to say on this amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair and members, and we are definitely open to the electronic signature pieces of this amendment. We're also open to the option of allowing for the use of student IDs, but I believe that this language is mandatory. And
Council, could you please, excuse me, I don't mean to cut you off, but we're running short on time. I still do want to hear from Dr. Halperin, who is scheduled to testify too. Council, could you please indicate whether you believe this is permissive or mandatory language?
I have just one moment.
Sure.
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
While we're waiting on that, perhaps,
sorry, Jen.
If we may, Dr. Halperin, if you could please come to the table and offer your testimony. Thank you for taking the time to be here today.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for hearing me. I am Max Halperin, a professor of computer science who served on the Electronic Roster Task Force. It was a pleasure and an honor to serve along with Senators Skiffmeyer and Bonner and the other distinguished members of the task force. The reason why the governor appointed me to that task force was pursuant to a part of the law that asked for someone with some technical expertise, and that was the role I was to play. And it's for that reason that I want to explain why our task force's recommendations put such an emphasis on the use of paper. Ms. Underhill earlier today remarked on my colleague Dr. Halderman from Michigan that he was a technologist who was very cautious and skeptical about technology, and I would describe myself the same way, and in fact I think that's pretty much the professional norm. Before I get into the specific question of counting voters, which was what I intended to focus on, I do want to address a couple other things that have been raised today that I think are somewhat related. One, with regard to the technology reliability, Senator Newman had inquired about experience in other states, and Ms. Underhill remarked upon Denver. Just to clarify what she said, perhaps correct, 2006, when Denver had their disaster, and I described this. Some of you may remember in 2011, I was before this committee with regard to Senator Limmer's legislation and described the 2006 Denver disaster. And in that instance, they did not fall back on paper rosters. They did not have paper rosters to fall back upon. Their legislation in Colorado did not require it, unlike this bill. Their legislation permitted them to fall back on another computer system, which was not available and able to be used. And what actually happened is that literally tens of thousands of voters went away from the polling place, having given up and not voted. They estimated about 20% of the turnout that day did not vote as a result of that failure. So that's maybe why some of us are cautious, experiences like that. With regard to the study also, since that's been subject of some discussion today, I will say that at the risk of being a little provocative, what the legislature termed a pilot project this past year might be better called a proof of concept, a feasibility demonstration. It showed that electronic rosters could be used, gave us a little experience with what that was like. But it was not a full pilot project in the sense of gaining useful data from which we could extrapolate the performance of a full-scale system. The study that this task force recommendation calls for would be a careful quantitative study where we would actually measure how long it takes for each of the kinds of voter interactions, whether it be to register, whether it be to sign in, as well as then the time spent posting that. And we would actually have then the ability to answer questions such as Mr. Mansky and Mr. Maeda were speculating on earlier. And so I think that having not done that, it's very reasonable for the legislature to appropriate and direct that it be done in the coming year. With regard to our emphasis on paper, I want to particularly call out the example, since it's provoked some interest elsewhere, that we made no change, or we recommend no change be made, to how the number of voters signing in is determined, that that still be done by election judges counting physical signatures or physical pieces of paper. And it may seem odd, not only from the perspective of the labor that that requires, but also accuracy, because election judges do require repeated counts to get a reliable count, whereas an electronic poll book, under ordinary circumstances, will give you the exact right number the first time. So the question is, why then were particularly, I think, those of us on the task force with a technical background so insistent that that not be the number we rely on? And in brief, it's because those of us with that kind of up-close view of technology do not trust it without verification. And electronic roster systems, unlike voting systems, there is no certification process. There is no testing process beyond, basic does it seem to work, try it out. They are not subject to the kind of formal certification that a voting system is. And we really don't know how rigorous the development processes, the quality assurance processes are that these various vendors use. For all we know, there could be some huge gaping security hole just waiting to be discovered. And timely awareness of vulnerabilities is really hard to come by. Those of you who follow the news know within the last couple weeks, Apple was in the embarrassing position of fixing an absolutely gaping hole in their security that had been there for over a year. And it took them that long to figure out and do anything about it. And I personally find it a little sobering to think that the systems that affected included the iPads that were used in three precincts in St. Paul for the November pilot project. The I will, Madam Chair, I can see you're about to ask. I will emphasize that there is no evidence that that security vulnerability was exploited in the St. Paul elections, and I will emphasize that I'm not knowledgeable about all the other layers of security that may have been present and may have made it impossible to exploit under those circumstances. But it's just a general concept that we have to be very cautious about placing trust in a black box. It's not like humans doing a count in front of other humans' eyes.
Dr. Halperin, I was going to ask why, and maybe Ms. Frazier could answer this, but why not have the equipment certified by the Secretary of State like the voting equipment is?
I'd be happy to address it, and Ms. Frazier can as well. If she'd like, shall I go first? Or?
Well, Madam Chair and members, the voting equipment is certified to ensure that it meets the standards set both it's tested federally, and then we test it at the state level to ensure it meets state standards as well. And so there would need to be clear state standards to which we could test it, and those aren't necessarily in place yet.
Well, Ms. Frazier, but I believe that the functionality that is outlined in subdivision 2 of Article 2,
right,
where it says that it has all these 14 different things that are prescribed that it needs to have happen. And so I'm just wondering why, you know, so if we pass this and it becomes law, then why not have something in here that says that your office has to certify the equipment meets these standards instead of, it looks like to me now, instead it's the municipality saying that it meets these standards. Why not the reverse?
Madam Chair and members, with voting equipment testing, I mean, voting equipment is obviously very sensitive because it tells us who won the election. And so we want to be sure that it is very accurate and meets all of the state requirements. And so we both certify the equipment, and then it's tested by local election officials, and then pieces of it are also tested on election day in the polling place to ensure that there are no problems. Whereas this is about people signing in and getting their information updated. So it plays a different function. I don't know what the cost would be to our office if we had to certify it. And so, I mean, it's a question. If that's how the legislature wants to spend state resources, it's something we could look into.
Would you please look into how much that would cost? And just because I think if we're going to move forward with this type of system, we don't want the technology to be failing in front of voters, because that's just like what happened in Colorado. Even if they have a backup method where they can sign a paper roster, we want it to work. And that's what I see the certification process is ensuring. But Dr. Halperin, could you?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I will say that the kind of certification that the municipalities are asked to provide really is pretty pro forma, that the vendors are telling you that their system meets these specifications, that it has these functions and so forth. The voting systems that Ms. Frazier was talking about, there are very rigorous standards that really, you know, dive into exactly how they're developed and how they're secured and do extensive testing. And that kind of thing is incredibly expensive to develop and do. The only state that has done that for electronic roster systems or electronic poll book systems is Indiana. They recently did enact a certification standard. And we heard earlier there are quite a few states that use poll books, but only Indiana is doing certification. A program at Ball State University provides that certification service for Indiana. And they intentionally kept the scope of that limited to functionality testing, that it does everything it says it's supposed to do. So, for example, in Indiana, to sign in, to log into the system, you need to have two election judges from two different parties do their usernames and passwords. One doesn't suffice. So the test there that the Ball State folks do is they say, okay, let's try putting just one in and see if it'll let us in. No, it doesn't. Great. Passes that test. They intentionally did not include stress testing under heavy load. They did not include penetration testing under attack scenarios to check the security in a rigorous way. And despite that, their test document is just staggeringly thick. I mean, it's just this massive tome that explains step by step by step all the different tests that they have to do for those. And I'm not sure Minnesota really wants to try to up the ante on that and go yet further when we can achieve an end-to-end level of trust in the overall electoral system without needing to trust the specific computer technology by having that paper still in the loop, by having the human eyes still in the loop. That if it's spitting out the right paper, you don't really need to know what's going on inside the black box. You can see for yourself it did the right thing. And I think that's where the task force recommendations are going.
So, Dr. Halperin, just to try to not summarize, but to glean from what you said, you think that the language now meets enough security requirements under the proposed legislation so that we as policymakers would not have to worry about security issues on the e-poll books?
Yes, Madam Chair. I am very hopeful about that. The proposed legislation does specifically call for the Secretary of State to develop standards for the reliability, networking, and security. And, you know, I would certainly assume that they would follow established best practices in that area, and that that would suffice. The area that I and I think some members of the task force were nervous about was the exception made to the no networking outside the polling place rule for updating of absentee records. And that was one of those things where, you know, we're a task force, we come to it with different perspectives and backgrounds. I came to it very sensitive to the risks of technology. The local election administrators came to it very sensitive to the benefits that it could provide, particularly in a setting where we now have no excuse absentee voting, and they're very concerned about being able to update rosters with what could be a flood of last-minute absentee ballots. And so, you know, I'm hopeful that the task force is wiser than any one member.
Thank you. Senator Limmer, did you still have a question?
The only question I had was to Ms. Fraser. Ms. Fraser, you made a comment regarding meeting federal standards, and then the states would have a federal standard. Are they different from one another? Is one more secure or more demanding than the other?
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, there are federal standards for voting equipment. And so there are national test labs, and voting equipment is certified by the Election Assistance Commission. And once it receives federal certification or can prove that it has met the federal tests, then it can be certified in Minnesota. And then we have to be sure that it meets Minnesota standards. So, for example, we have specific algorithms for deciding the order of candidates on the ballot. And we have to be sure that the machine can deal with the rotation of candidates. And so that's the type of thing. We also, unlike other states, don't have separate ballots for Republicans in primaries versus Democrats. As you know, we have columns, and we have to be sure that the machine can, if somebody votes in more than one party in a partisan primary, returns the ballot to the voter so that they have a chance to correct it. So we just have different standards. They're not necessarily more or less rigorous.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe we're on the A6 amendment. Is that
yes.
correct?
Yes.
Kind of losing track here. But in fairness to Senator Boniff, I'm looking around the table and I'm counting heads, and I just wanted to alert you, Senator Boniff, that I've listened to the discussion on the A6 amendment, and I intend to vote against it. And I'm just giving you a heads up, given the membership, you know, at the table now. And the reason specifically why I'm going to vote against the A6 amendment is, is twofold. Number one, we're talking about a pilot project here. And I like the idea, when we're dealing with a pilot project, we're trying to figure out what to do in the future. And I like the idea of the backup of the paper and the electronic. That's number one. Number two, I'm not a techie guy, but we do have at the table a professor from Gustavus who is a techie guy. And he has very clearly stated he doesn't trust the black box without verification. So that really tells me that the A6 amendment as written, which says either the electronic signature or a regular signature, would be satisfactory. So for those two reasons, I just wanted to tell you, Senator Bonhoff, ahead of the vote, where I intend to go.
Madam Chair, the other part of this amendment that I don't know that the committee would want to lose, and I do concur with Ms. Fraser's desire for it to be optional, but that is the part that would allow jurisdictions to scan the student identification card and or the other additional documents that are in law that identify someone. So,
Madam Chair.
Let's just first hear from counsel. She has a response to the earlier question about whether this language is permissive or mandatory.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for giving me a minute to think that over. Looking at this, the amendment would require that any poll book technology that we're using here be able to scan a driver's license, an ID card, and a student ID. The person showing up to the polls could present one of those three things, and it would have to be able to read that. So if the desire was to have it optional that they must read ID cards and driver's licenses, and they could read student IDs if they wanted them to, we would need something other than what's in the amendment before us.
Well, I believe, Senator Bonhoff, you expressed interest in making it optional because it would be a big imposition, I think, to mandate the types of student ID cards, and that's what we would be going down. So could council suggest language to make it optional?
Yes. Well, Madam Chair, I have real concerns even about optional.
Okay, well, first let's let council suggest that language, and then we'll have a discussion on whether to pass the amendment or not.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Instead of amending the amendment, I think it would be best to leave that behind and do this by oral amendment, if that's acceptable to the committee.
Sure.
Well, Madam Chair, it may end up that we withdraw the amendment, so that's why we might want to get Senator Kiffmeyer's, because I was really putting this forward on behalf of Mr. Mansky and leaving it to the will of the committee. So
Senator Bonhoff, do you want to proceed with making the amendment optional, or do you want to?
I would like to hear what Senator Kiffmeyer has
Senator
to
Kiffmeyer.
Say.
I'm
Please.
Sorry, I was distracted. The last I heard,
I wanted to hear
pull
what
it.
You, yeah, what you want us. I wanted to hear what you had to say about the scanning the student IDs.
Well, I did a little more research on the statutory reference in here, and I just don't know that it does the job, and I have concerns about that, and I just don't feel like we have time now to fix it, and I don't know if conceptually we want to take that on. That's a fairly major policy. Whereas just implementing e-poll books itself has its own things, but then kind of doing some of that, I just have concerns at this time in that regard. And I just cannot emphasize more strongly how I'm enthusiastic about technology and absolutely enthusiastically skeptical about the absolute use of technology without backups and wet signatures and some of those things. So there were a number of reasons why I had concerns about this, but in regards to the student one, I thought this section, I looked for subdivision 3, and it's not showing up even on my iPad. So with that, Madam Chair, I wouldn't be able to support the amendment of any section right now. I'm sorry.
So, Senator Bonhoff, I understood this to be this language to be so that if you had an electronic poll book and it was able to scan an ID, all it would do would to populate that information. So I don't think we're amending anything about other instances of acceptable forms of ID. That is already established, and you're not proposing to change that.
Correct.
So, Senator Kiffmeyer, I respect your opinion, and if Senator Bonhoff wants to pull it, obviously that's her decision. But I think that this, if a student comes with an acceptable form of ID and the electronic pull book is able to read that identification, and that's a big question of if, I think, at this point,
yes.
That then all that information is doing is populating onto the pull book. It's not being used for any other purposes, if
correct.
I'm not mistaken.
Madam Chair, that is correct. I was just looking around the room and thinking, but that is correct, and I think it would be worthwhile.
Senator Kiffmeyer, is that your understanding of it, or is there anything that council could clarify for you, or are you just not comfortable with that at all?
Well, those are a whole bunch of ifs, and that's exactly the point. We're doing state law with a lot of ifs in it that I see here, because it's referencing a statute here, and that's just my opinion right now. I do not have the confidence that it's doing what we think it's doing, is more importantly what I see. I know what you are saying. I know what Senator Bonhoff is, but I cannot, in my research right now, confirm that indeed is the case with this language. So is there something else that can do it? I don't know, but not at this time.
Ms. Frazier.
Madam Chair and members, the statutory reference in the amendment is to 201.161 subdivision 3. I think it's actually 061, which is the same-day registration statute. So I actually think there's a typo in the amendment. But I think that from the local perspective, there are some precincts where student IDs are overwhelmingly used as proof of residence. And I think that Mr. Manske and some of the other local election officials believe that it could be helpful if the vendors are able to provide the technology for students to be able to swipe their IDs, to have that information populated. And I think that just adding a sentence at the bottom of this section that says electronic poll books may allow for data to be entered manually or by scanning a student ID card from a post-secondary institution in Minnesota would allow for that potential but not require it. If you wanted to include the other documents authorized by the statute, you could, or probably the most important document from their perspective is student IDs.
In the interest of time, I think that, Senator Bonhoff, you've indicated to me you want to pull the amendment. This, if you want to work with Senator Kiffmeyer and can come to an agreement on this language, then there will be an opportunity to amend it.
The next stop.
Somewhere along the line or on the floor.
Thank you.
Okay.
I withdraw.
So, Senator Bonhoff, do you have one more amendment now?
No, I do not. I talked to the Secretary of State's office. We're not going to do that.
Okay. So with that, I see that the main issue remaining is whether you would like to move forward with the bill as amended or if you would like to propose something else.
Madam Chair, I move that we move forward with the bill as amended.
Is there any discussion to that?
Could we clarify what my record here only shows Article 1 deleting Subdivision 8 and then an appropriation for that? Is that the only amendment?
Madam Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, it was also that first amendment, the A1, where we did all the conforming changes to the future statutes or to the other statutes.
And Senator Kiffmeyer, Ms. Stengel just confirmed that those were the two amendments. So at this time, is there anybody else in the audience who cares to testify on Senate File 1811 as amended? Any discussion from the committee?
Madam Chair.
Senator Newman.
I may have gotten lost in the discussion here. Is the appropriation in this bill has now been deleted?
No, it is
not.
Senator Newman, the appropriation section is still included. We do have a fiscal note that has it been passed out? Mm-hmm. Yes. We do have a fiscal note.
We deleted part of the appropriation.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's correct. We did delete the portion of the appropriation that has to do with the build or buy study.
Okay.
But the remaining part of the appropriation, which includes the $5,000 to each precinct, the 18 precincts identified, is still included, as are the other sections of the fiscal note. And I would assume this bill, if it passes today, it will go to the Rules Committee. There will be an updated fiscal note, and then the appropriation, the request can be more clearly identified.
And Madam Chair, the state and local government has requested the bill.
Does this have a
Correct. Okay.
And eventually, Madam Chair or Senator Bonoff, this eventually would then go to finance, would it not?
That's correct. First, it will go to Rules Committee, then it will go to state and local government, and then it would go to finance before going to the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
That was my question.
Okay. So, Senator Hayden moves that Senate File 1811 as amended be recommended to pass and move to the Rules Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion passes and the bill as amended moves to the Rules Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for your patience.